Welcome to a special edition of One Nation Radio. I'm Rich Latta. I'm sitting here not with James Boyd, but I'm sitting here with Dave Fenichel in person. First time ever podcast. Dave's flight is delayed. So we had a little bit of extra time to actually just, you know, talk about what we watched last night at AEW Dynasty and the weekend overall. What's going on, man?
I'm living the dream. I am really tired, and it's going to be a long day, but I'm happy that we can fit in a podcast. This is going to be good times.
Yeah, man. It was a show of shows and a really loaded weekend in a lot of aspects. I spent all day at the AEW building yesterday just kind of meeting everybody that one can think of, including Barry Bloom, who I was sitting, you know, watching the show with, and no one knew what he looked like, and I think that's just the rarest thing that kind of happened. You know, I got to hang out with Dave Fenichel, Floyd Johnson, shout to Floyd, and we watched one of the, you know, AEW has such a stellar reputation of their pay-per-view events. This is just another great one, I think, and, you know, it's impossible to rank these things at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is, AEW, you can say what you want about their weekly, right? It's not always perfect, but, like, they get pay-per-views right, and this one stacks up with any that I can remember. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm going to have to go home and watch it on TV again to really get a little perspective, but, like, being there, I mean, top to bottom, this card just killed it on every level.
Yeah, one of the, you know, obviously, you know, the big story coming out of it is AEW crowning Swerve Strickland as the new AEW World Champion, first black champion. Means a lot on a lot of different levels to me. I'm going to explain it more when I'm with James and I've gathered my thoughts more. I think I'm going to write something up. But, you know, just quickly on that, like, you know, it was such a special night for him because that guy's worked so hard to just get better at pro wrestling to at every aspect, his in-ring work, how he approaches the game, his promos, character, and, you know, his overall connection with the audience. And what he did, I think, in AEW and his road to the top is a blueprint for people to follow, because I think where a lot of people have gone wrong in AEW is just needing to be protected at all the times, like never wanting to give, never wanting to make others, you know, elevate others. Swerve did that a lot for a lot of guys, put a lot of guys over, put, you know, gave guys careers essentially. Look at the Acclaimed, like, you know, who'd they get over against? Swerve in Our Glory, like last summer, you know, matches with Orange Cassidy, just, you know, just big stuff. And to see him, like, win that title in, you know, it's just such a gratifying feeling, you know, as his friend, and as a fan as well of his, and it made me, you know, I didn't tear up or anything, but it was like, you want to see good people win, and that's a good person, like, and you can take it from me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's pretty surreal to think about, even where he was a year ago, you know, I mean, you know, starting to gain a little bit of momentum, but, you know, looking like a mid-carder, right? You know, and his rise has been phenomenal, and I think there's a term that gets used sometimes, you know, you can get over without going over, and, you know, I think that Swerve is a prime example of that. You know, he's been on TV a ton, right? The audience connected with him, and the rest is history, and, you know, I think it kind of speaks to the times in AEW a little bit right now, where you know, I think early on, they kind of had a long-term plan of, like, these were going to be our first four world champs, you know? I think that to run from, you know, Jericho to Moxley to Kenny Omega to Hangman, like, that was always the plan. After Hangman won the title, it feels like it's been opened up. And, you know, I still feel that way, right? You know, I think AEW is a land of opportunity for wrestlers right now. You know, there's no time like the present. And Swerve took the ball and ran with it, you know, and I can't wait to see what his title run looks like. I mean, it feels really fresh and really new.
Right.
And I'm looking forward to seeing what's coming next, you know.
And it being like 2024, it was like a kind of a conversation we had last night. I don't know if it was at the after party. It was like, you know, we're talking to Swerve coming in 2019 in AEW. So this guy was always being looked at, you know, from the management in this company as someone, you know, that they wanted to focus on, but everything I think happens in due time at the right time. Because say he comes in 2019, it's not guaranteed. Like, that plan is still the plan. Yeah. And you're still, you know, you're here 5 years later, and then there's more people coming in. And he navigated the transition from WWE and NXT to AEW better than everyone. Yeah. And that's not that's not easy for a lot of people who struggle with, you know, whether they want to do business the right way, whether they, you know, want to do the wrestling style, whether they whether they just, like, fit in the culture of knowing what AEW is. And this guy is an AEW guy. Like, this guy is, like, stretch his wings so much as far as, like, exploring his creativity in the ring and out the ring. Of course, you know, I've done plenty of music with him. Like, I know this guy and how he thinks about pro wrestling, like, in and out at this point. Talk to him 7 days a week about it. So it's a very proud time for me, and this is one for the homies right here. So you know, the end of the match that he had with Joe, thought it was just, you know, it was a classic kind of story. This was like, we're gonna strip this down to, you know, the basics. And it was like this dominant, you know, guy Joe plays his role to perfection kind of in this build. And, you know, in this match, it was just like, drops him on the outside of the ring, kicks the shit out of him. Like, so, and from there, you know, Swerve just, like, you know, fires up, crowd comes alive, like, and, you know, at that moment, you know, the magic happens.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you hit on something really interesting. I thought, you know, just kind of circling back for a quick minute, you know, we were talking about at the after party about, like, well, what happens if he comes in 2019? I don't think that would have been the best thing for him, you know? I mean, history hasn't been that kind to some of the AEW originals, right? Unless they were some of the top guys. You look at, like, the Dark Order. You look at Best Friends. You look at SCU. Like, a lot of those guys are not around anymore. Sammy Guevara, right? Where is he, you know? So it's like, you know, there wasn't really the opportunity that I think there is right now. And you know, he took advantage of it. As for the match, you know, it kind of reminds me of, there was a match years ago. It was Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins. Mm-hmm. And I remember Seth Rollins talking about the match after. It was a nothing match, right? And it ended because The Undertaker came back and they were setting up Lesnar versus Undertaker for SummerSlam.
Yeah, literally had no finish.
Right. And like, you know, I remember Rollins was talking about it later, and he used that to talk about what a great mind for the business Brock Lesnar has. And the reason was that, you know, Rollins suggested all these things that they do in the match, and Brock was like, no. He's like, the only thing people are going to remember is The Undertaker coming back. Mm-hmm. He's like, why would we burn all of this stuff in this match that nobody's going to remember? Let's save it for another time, you know? And I kind of felt
and
that
they,
was...
And they did.
Right, know, they did. They killed it.
2019.
That, yeah, twice. SummerSlam was awesome, right? You know, I mean, so I think, you know, that's kind of how I felt about the match last night, right? Was that, like, the only thing people were going to remember was Swerve winning, right? And I think there was a pretty good consensus that people felt like it was just Swerve's time. It was his moment, you know? And, like, there's really nothing about the match that stands out to me other than the fact that he won and he got his moment, you know? And, like, they were put in a tough spot last night, too. I mean, one of the best matches ever, and then an excellent ladder match, right?
With,
you know?
With Jack Perry, like, coming back.
Right.
God-level
right.
response.
And, like, both those matches, like, had the crowd beginning end, right? You know, and like, so they had a tough spot, and you know, I think that
I was a little worried about that.
I was
too.
Worried. And I was
then,
worried.
Yeah, I ain't gonna cap. Like, but then I saw Swerve's entrance, and I was like, oh, the people are alive.
Yeah,
still.
We're good. Yeah,
like,
you know,
and that was a great St. Yeah. Louis crowd. This is my first time ever coming to St. Louis.
St. Louis is a hot market.
This was awesome.
It did not feel like 6,000 people in there. It felt like 15,000 people in there. You know, it kind of reminded me of some of the older AEW crowds. You know, me and you went to some of the early events that were just where the crowd was just insane, and you know, I felt that way pretty much all night. You know, but the match was good. You know, it was fine, but like I said, completely unmemorable. Really, the only thing that I'm ever going to take from that is that Swerve won.
Yeah, it was great. Like, he lived the belt up, jumped in the crowd, essentially. I'm slapping the AEW championship, like, and pointing, holding up the number one on there. You know, it was really cool, man. And I actually, you know, somehow got to ask a question at the scrum. Because you think about this guy, you know, I talk about his journey, you know. Not, you know, I remember a time where he won a match at AEW All Out. It was the match of the night. And then some reporter asked just a dumb question, which Swerve answered in character pretty much to kind of hide his actual anger with that, when he said, hey, should an audible have been called so the Acclaim could win, right? And, like, that's just not how these things work, right? Unless there's, like, an injury. So, like, to go from, like, essentially a fuck what you did in the ring, the other person should have won, to, hey, he's the world champion now, everyone's fucking loving it, how about it now? Like, that's the moment I kind of wanted to capture with that, but, you know, I'm ready to see what's next for him. But you did mention the ladder match, Young Bucks, FTR, lots of risks taken in this thing. I don't think this was the greatest match they've ever had, but it was definitely unique. And, you know, the big story on all this, Bucks, three-time champions, but Jack Perry comes back a man completely refreshed, in a way that, you know, an AEW original, like, he has his mini excursion. He has, obviously, the Lightning Rod moment with CM Punk. The all-in footage was shown last week to, you know, when we first saw it, I don't think it came off the best for a lot of people watching it. But you look at the two events that he's, you know, shown up in, you know, in Chicago at Windy City Riot, and then here, these were superstar reactions. Like, this was like, hey, man, like, ride it. You know, I think this guy's special. And
yeah, it was interesting, you know. I mean, lot to talk about there. You know, first off, like, that's a hard act to follow, right? I mean, they're right after Danielson and Ospreay, which I think everybody agrees is one of the best matches that we've ever seen, right? And, you know, I don't think the ladder match suits FTR, you know, and their style all that well. You know, I think there was a lot of reasons to think that this could have went wrong, and it didn't. You know, I mean, they missed some spots. It was a little clunky in some areas, and I agree with you that, like, it probably doesn't measure up with the previous three matches that they've had. Mm-hmm. But it was still really good, you know? And, you know, like, again, another thing where the ending was really what mattered, right? You know, Jack Perry shows up. He's the fourth member of the new Elite now, which feels like a really fresh faction, right? You know, between him and Okada. And the Bucks, you know, win the titles. And I think that's what's needed. You know, the tag division's been a little stale lately, right? You know, they're not doing a good job developing new tag teams to be there. So to have some stability with the Young Bucks, who have, you know, their act is pretty fresh right now, right? They've changed everything that they were doing. They've got a great stable behind them. I think that that's the right move for the tag division going forward. You know, the challenge is going to be, like, other than FTR, like,
who's
rising up, right? Because, you know, we thought maybe the tag team tournament might be an opportunity for that. It wasn't, right? There is not a single team that benefited from that tournament, you know? Right. I mean, it was just a vehicle to crown the Young Bucks for a third time, and that's cool. But, you know, that's going to be the challenge going forward, but I think that the tag titles are in good hands.
Yeah, you know, and as much as I would love, you know, hey, watching the Young Bucks and the Lucha Brothers again, like, I imagine other people, you'd be like, yo, again, are we in the same, are we running this back again? I'm sure we'll get, you know, that match at some point during this reign, but, you know, they've got to get Top Flight going. They've got to get, you know, aggressive with who they bring in. I think Motor City Machine Guns is probably someone they're going to be looking at. And really start, like, looking up and down the roster. Go to ROH. Like, the Infantry is a team that, you know, is out there. And it's, like, start moving, like, having the lower-level guys compete to essentially see who's going to rise up to the Bucks and kind of organically figure it out.
Yeah, one of the teams I'm interested in to see what they do with is the BCC. Like, you know, I mean, they had Moxley and Claudio, you know, beat FTR clean as a whistle, right? You know? And I don't think they do that if they don't have plans for them as a tag team. I understand that Mox is, you know, a little busy right now, you know, being IWGP champion and all that, you know, minor details. But I think that they're probably going to play a factor there, right? Because that's a fresh matchup for the Bucks, right? Like, we haven't seen that.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, that might be the direction that they go in if they want to do something that's fresh and different.
Yeah, but we've skated around it long enough. Danielson versus Ospreay.
Jeez, man.
Bro.
I don't even know where to start, you know? Like, how does a match... I mean, the expectations for that match were just out of control, right? You know, I mean, we're getting chants at the beginning of the match when they're doing headlocks of, this is awesome, fight forever, both these guys, all of this stuff, right? You know? And, like, it was almost like they were set up to fail, but they didn't. They crushed it. They absolutely crushed it on every level. Like, you know, everything about that match to me was perfect, you know? And I've been to a lot of wrestling matches, and I think that's by far the best match I've ever seen live.
I am 100% with you, and we're agreeing a lot, which is like
rare.
Rare.
We used to scream at each other on old podcasts.
But while David here, I just like to take the opportunity to say Jinder Mahal was fired by WWE, and
obviously that's going to be Swerve's next contender, right? I mean, that's the only way we can go with that.
Danielson and Ospreay. You know, when this match was announced, I was actually in the building. They announced it in Atlanta. Like, Ospreay just got done fighting Kyle Fletcher, and Danielson came out, and I was like, huh? And then I knew I was going to Dynasty immediately. Like, you know, like I knew Swerve was, you know, going to challenge Samoa Joe, and then Danielson and Ospreay, I was like, I'm booking the flight. And what I watched in that match was just the highest level art of pro wrestling performance, reading the crowd, seeing the guys like come up with just creative spots to where it comes down to my arm versus your knee. And, you know, a little inside baseball, I was there at the building all day. I watched them going through the spots, you know, and, you know, kind of like, you know, just seeing how they were maneuvering around the ring, like, you know, but obviously I'm not in the ring, so I can't, like, put it all together or whatever, right? So I'm just like, whatever, I'll see it later. And, you know, I still, like, it was like what I watched, it was completely unidentifiable. Like, they had, like, layers upon layers upon layers of things that played out in the actual match that I didn't see at all. So, like, I don't really think I'm giving anything away by that. But that Tiger suplex off the top rope.
Unreal.
Sick. And it was just like a, it was a, you know, they called it an absolute dream match. Like, it was a peak of profession. I think it's the best match I've seen since, I want to say, 6-9-2018, which was Okada Omega 4. Like, I think that's what we're talking about here. And obviously, Ospreay, you know, did his thing with Konosuke Takeshita last month. And, you know, Danielson's been on this historic tear ever since, you know, coming back with the Ricky Starks Texas Death Match. You know, from that point forward, this guy's been all over the world. New Japan, CMLL, AEW. Like, I don't, like reflecting on Bryan Danielson and just seeing how special, like, he still is, it's crazy. Like, thinking about the years that were taking off his career and, you know, wasted, and, you know, some of the booking, like, this guy's one of the most sensational pro wrestlers to ever live. And then this was the knighting of Will Ospreay. Like, he's British, right? So we're going to knight this motherfucker right here, like, with Bryan Danielson. Like, last year it was Kenny Omega knighting him, and then this year is Bryan Danielson knighting him. Will Ospreay is a goddamn sorcerer. Like, and people drag their feet on this guy for years. He's 30 years old. Like, this is going to be the premier in-ring wrestler of this generation. Like, and if you don't know this by now, you're not paying attention, you have your eyes closed, you are refusing to admit the truth. Perjury.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much to add there. You know, I do worry that, you know, he might eventually say something to get himself canceled, because he just seems like a complete loose cannon, right? You know, and I know
there's been some stuff from the past,
you know, but even so, like, I remember watching him in the press conference. I'm like, this guy's going off the rails, you know, and so hopefully we can avoid all that, because he's special, man, you know, like, I mean, his matches are must-see TV, and, you know, to be honest, like, I almost wish, like, AEW used him a little bit less, right? Like, you know, I don't need to see him on Dynamite Wrestling, right? Like, I want to see him on pay-per-view as a special attraction, wrestling 30-minute matches every month, you know?
Right.
That works for me, you know? It kind of brings up something interesting, though. Like, where do you go with Will Ospreay from here, right? Because, you know, the thing is, he's coming like a freight train. But, you know, you've got Swerve on top as a babyface now. You've got Ospreay right there as a babyface. I think it makes sense to keep them away from each other. But, like, how long can you really hold that off, you know? I mean, it's going to be an interesting challenge for AEW. It's a good problem to have, you know, too much amazing talent, I definitely think that, you know, that'll be the struggle for AEW, is that there's going to be a pretty high demand to see Ospreay in the world title picture.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that makes sense, given Swerve being the champ right now.
Yeah, it's almost set up to where, you know, I've been talking about this on One Nation Radio, where Okada is in his own world now with that Continental belt.
Yep.
And he's going to be in the C2 later this year. So he's essentially kind of removed from the world title axis. So, you know, is there a situation where they do the same thing with Ospreay? There's other champions around that are heels, like Roger Strong's a heel. Adam Copeland kind of has something else going on, but there's, you know, I think there are other opportunities possible for him. And don't forget, this guy is an international sensation. He's made his bones in RevPro, working the smallest of the smallest. I wouldn't be shocked if we see Will Ospreay pull up to SGW Uganda. Like, we know he loves going to Japan. So, like, you know, do we send this guy to Mexico next? Like, can he represent AEW all over the globe? Possibly. I don't know.
It's going to be interesting to see. You know, on the flip side, where does Danielson go from here? You know, I mean, he's low-key eating a lot of L's lately, right? You know, yeah. I mean, he's talked about how he's close to the end of his career, but then lately he's been saying, you know, I may never retire fully, right? You know, yeah. So who knows what that means. But, I mean, like, he's eaten a lot of L's, and he's run through a lot of feuds. Like, I don't know what the next step for him really is at this point. What do you think?
I think with Danielson, like, it's very easy to flip the switch on this guy. You know, could you set up a couple successive matches, you know, that are, you know, paired off in pairings for him to win? You know, there is a tournament coming in AEW that's running annually. So, you know, who knows? I think that with him doing that Yes Chant again, like so freely kind of, he's done all his losing essentially. Yeah, I think from here, Danielson's going to make one last run to, like, do, you know, he's like you said, he's playing that retirement thing, right? Yeah. So it's like, all right, you know, is he really going to take his one last shot at the belt? You know, him and Swerve have history. Yeah. Like, they faced each other last year, you know, at Title Tuesday, or it was head-to-head with NXT. There was a press conference where Swerve said he wanted Danielson. You know, they were like, hey, who do you want, you know, at Wembley Stadium, or who do you want at, in another match? And he was like, yo, I think Tony, you know, and, you know, myself, I want to get my revenge on Danielson. So, he's always out there. Like, he's a white whale.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, I mean, Samoa Joe is proof that, like, AW doesn't really need a lot of time to heat somebody up, right? You know, yeah. I mean, it's not like Joe was really doing a whole lot. He was kind of floundering around. Sure, he was the Ring of Honor television champion, but who's really watching that at this point, right? Yeah. You know, so, like, he went from that to beating MJF for the world title to close a pay-per-view awfully fast. So, I mean, even though Danielson's been taking L's, he's still Bryan Danielson, right? So I think that actually makes a lot of sense. You know, I'm interested to see where he goes. He's somebody I've followed forever. You know, he's one of my personal favorites, and I was really happy to see him get his moment last night, you know? What'd you think of that ending, though? You know, I mean, it looked like he legitimately got hurt at the end of the match. You know, Will Ospreay was talking about how he's going to retire the Stormbreaker 91. I don't know if that's kayfabe. I don't know if that's real. It's interesting, you know?
It sounds like, Dave? It sounds like a story.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like to me. I think Bryan Danielson fell flat on his back, as God intended pro wrestlers to do. And people, you know, get so worked by Danielson, he's smartly taking advantage of them and their safety concerns. And then, you know, with Will Ospreay saying he's not going to use the move, if anything that that pro wrestlers can tell you, like, these people are liars.
Yeah.
Like, this sets up for Will Ospreay one day to be like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to Stormbreaker somebody, and we quote-unquote know how dangerous it is, and he'll turn heel on somebody with it.
I saw a great comment at the bottom of the story. It was like, could you imagine Stan Hansen drilling some motherfucker with a lariat and then being like, you know what, I hurt him too bad, I'm not going to do it again. It's probably a worker working here, but I was just interested in your thoughts there.
This feels like one of the oldest, like, storylines, like, you could possibly do. Like, I swear to God, we could probably pull up Mid-South or something, and there was a motherfucker on there, yeah, man, this move is banned, and, you know, blah, 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 but he played it up. Like, he came into the conference apathetic and just kind of very apologetic, excuse me, and, you know, I think this guy is setting everyone up, pretty much. We had the Women's World title match, Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa. Man, this is the best Toni Storm match since the Izumi match the other week. I think this was slightly better, and I think Thunder Rosa looked great in this match.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was a good night for the women in general, right? You know, I mean, they had two well-hyped, matches that both deliver in their own way, right? You know, and yeah, I thought they did a great job. You know, I think they were in a spot where like people were ready for the big three, right? You know, and it was a spot they easily could have fallen on their face and they didn't. You know, they caught the crowd. It was a good match beginning to end. I was floored that Toni Storm won clean, you know, especially when they had, you know, Luther kind of out there, like, you know, they had a lot of things going on.
Yeah,
and
Brazo.
Yeah, right? Like, you know, it felt like it was going to be a dusty finish, so to speak. But, you know, I mean, I think that at this point, they're probably just not looking to move off Toni Storm, you know, as champ anytime soon. Like, she's too interesting of a character. I think she's, is she Australian or is she British?
She's Australian.
Yeah, she's Australian. Okay, so not really any tie-in for Wembley Stadium or anything like that.
But Mariah May is British.
Right.
And also, very linked in with this story, Mariah May is a, you know, there have been things where she's looking at the belt. Luther's ripping the belt out of her hand. So I don't think any challenger that's coming up is going to, like, be close to her, essentially. And then it's going to be Mariah May, ultimately, who is the first, quote-unquote, dangerous challenger for her.
Right. You know, I thought there was a chance Britt Baker was coming back last night, you know, and that would be, a good challenger for Toni Storm. But, yeah, I mean, there's really no one on the horizon, you know. I mean, she's brought herself to a different level from a character standpoint, right? You know, I mean, there's plenty of good wrestlers, women's wrestlers in AEW, but from a character standpoint, it's like Toni Storm,
people
and then it's
her.
A fucking cliff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's great on camera. She's great in scrums. Like, she's always saying something that, you know, is memorable, right? You know, and I think they're just going to keep running with that for as long as it's hot. And last night was a great match. You know, it was back and forth. I mean, Thunder Rosa can work, right? You can say what you want about her, but she can work. Toni Storm can work. So, like, you know, they put on a real solid match. And, like, you know, it was in a spot where it could have failed. And, you know, I think they did a great job to not bring it there.
I think with my biggest reservation with the whole time with Toni Storm thing was I thought a lot of the work has fallen short. But that was not the case tonight. If she has matches like tonight to go along with the gimmick, you can count me in. But if it's just so gimmick heavy and then, like, just do it, you remember the thing she did with Carl Shida where she, like, stuffed the pan in her ass and then did, like, it was just too far out there. I was like, all right, man, this is something else. But,
it's not like, it's not quite, you know, Triple H fucking Katie Vick's corpse, but it's pretty bad.
I saw Thunder Rosa in the back after, and it was like, you know, she was like, you didn't expect that, did you? And I was like, I know who you are. Like don't play with me. Like, I've been rocking with Thunder Rosa from the jump.
She's had some of the best women's matches in AEW history, right? You know, I mean, and, you know, she had another great match last night.
Yeah, man.
It was a really good addition to the show, which is already a loaded show, you know?
That's your top four. You know, that's pretty good. Chris Jericho and Hook. What a match, like, in this building. Like, please retire, Chance. Go home, Jericho, go. They were on Chris Jericho's ass on this thing. And, you know, a lot of people didn't like this match. I thought this had a particular charm to it.
Yeah.
The crowd was still, you know, despite, you know, their anti-Jericho chants, they were still fully locked in the match, I feel like. They were living and dying with Hook's near falls and his kickouts. And, you know, Jericho is like, you know, he's got the whole learning tree thing now. And it's a it's an entire gimmick that, you know, some people think he's, you know, drawing strings from CM Punk, his, you know, backstage demeanor and things like that. There's also kind of like this thing with Jericho and Hook. And it's like, yeah, you beat the guy already. So they're doing the match again. So people are tired of it on a couple levels. But you're giving him that FTW belt. You're in on this gimmick now, right?
Yeah.
If you're AEW, right?
I got to be honest. I was one of the people who just didn't want to see it. You know what I mean? Like, I looked at this and I was like, why is this on the show? Right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's like four or five matches that need time on the show. And this is just going to take time away from, you know, potentially those matches. And, you know, thankfully Jericho's a heel, right? Because, like, if people are chanting, please retire at you or go the fuck home and you're a face, you're dead. Dead on arrival, coma, right? So, like, you know, that works, right? You know, he could work it into his persona, you know? You know, listen, if there's anybody who can read a crowd and adjust accordingly, it's Jericho, you know? Because he's as stale as he's been since he got to AEW, right? You know, I mean, he's going...
Talk about that five-year effect.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, is he borderlining? Is he, like, getting to, like, Cody territory in AEW where, like, there's not going to be any coming back from it? I don't know that he's there yet.
Yeah.
But, like, I think he's on a trajectory to get there, right? And so, like, they've got to be really, really careful with what they do with him, you know? Because I don't know, like, I mean, FTW is a bullshit title, right? Yeah, you know, yeah, I mean, so it's like, garbage.
It's a total gimmick.
But like, you know, does this mean they're just going to build back up to, you know, Hook versus Jericho 3? Okay, fine, right? You know, if that's their way of thinking it's going to get Hook over, I disagree.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that this is, like, the best thing for Hook in general. I think he's kind of like a supporting character
in
this war between the crowd and Chris Jericho, you know?
Correct.
And I don't think he's going to, like, leave this any better or any worse off than he was, right? You know, and if the whole purpose is to get him over, like, this ain't it, you know?
Yeah, this thing's not for Chris Jericho, as some people would lead you to believe. This is for Hook. However, I feel like I'm out on Hook.
I think I'm out on Hook, too.
And, I don't see it. I don't see the striking. I don't see the kind of ability to stand in there and look like you are a force.
Doesn't look believable.
Yeah, and, with Jericho, you can say what you want. Jericho takes up so much space. Like, you saw him last night.
Massive.
And he's a massive guy. And he's not tall, but he takes up space. And the way, I noticed this when they did that scramble match at, I don't know if it was Revolution or it was World's End, but when Jericho started chopping Hook, and it was like, Hook was standing in there with him, right? But I was like, yo, he has to go through things like this, and Jericho's the perfect guy to do it. But it doesn't seem like that next gear is connecting for Hook.
I was never in on Hook, you know. I was amazed by his early reactions, but it kind of felt like almost like a meme,
meme.
It was like, you know, oh, this is Taz's kid, okay, cool, whatever, right? But you know, his problem is he's small, but he's small, not in a uniquely charming way, like Darby Allin, for example, right? Darby Allin's a small guy, but he wrestles in such a unique way and connects with the audience in such a way.
He's a blitz, he moves, right. He's fast.
You know, and
he's
you need
something.
That, because, you know, listen, we're not in the land of the giants, but you still need to have a little bit of size, you know, or at least look like a wrestler.
Or have an innate special ability, whether you're a great technician, mm-hmm. a great striker,
right.
You have great change of direction, or you do something right. Where it's like that. With Hook, it's like bad strikes, and you throw some suplexes.
And his suplexes look forced. They look strained, right?
Yeah.
They don't look impressive, you know? And, to me, he looks like a lacrosse player trying to cosplay as a wrestler, right? You know, I mean, I don't see it with him.
I feel like you grew up with Hooks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, kind of a little bit, you know? So, it's interesting, you know? I think I don't see it with him. I don't think there's anything that they can do with him. And, you know, it's going to get to a point where they're going to stop trying soon because, there's just too much talent in AEW to keep wasting it.
Look at the level of guys here. And I know he's a young guy, but, you know, there are rumors about him possibly, you know, wanting to jump to WWE. And, man, if I'm him, pack it up to Winter Park for a little bit.
I don't see a fit there, though. You know what I mean? He doesn't do anything that the WWE likes. He's not larger than life. He's not a great personality. He doesn't work a WWE style. He doesn't look like a WWE wrestler, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a fit for him. Maybe he goes to TNA to get some more reps or something, you know? But, to me, it's just, I just don't think he belongs. You know, I'm also interested in Jericho, right? Because, I mean, Jericho's a victim of his own success. His run in AEW's been awesome, right? He's faced everybody.
He's been a heel.
He's been a face.
The first champion.
Right.
He's done countless things for people in front of the screen, right. And behind the screen.
Right. I mean, he's going to have a job there for as long as he wants it. But, you know, does he get to a point where he's man, this isn't the right place for me anymore? Maybe a run back in WWE is actually good for him, you know? I was talking about it with Cody, when Cody was failing, I was he should go back to the WWE. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to kind of feel that way about Jericho, is that, he should maybe go back to WWE, refresh a little bit, you know, and have a run there, because I just don't know what you do with Chris Jericho in 2024 that's interesting that hasn't already been done.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, he's a Lionheart, you know, and all this stuff. And it's you did the Lionheart redo in 2022, I believe. Right. So even that is, you know, on fumes, right? But I think Jericho's trying something. I'm willing to give this guy a lot more rope than I would give people with lesser instincts than him. So I think, you know, to your point about him going to WWE, I find it hard to believe that he would report to Paul Levesque on any level.
Yeah, that's true. They really don't. But you know what? They've shown that they can do business in the past, though, haven't they?
But I think he would work with Dwayne Johnson. He would, you know, you know, there's always been a great relationship there. So that's something to, you know, look at. AEW International title match. The Tough White Man division has arrived. Roger Staubach versus Kyle O'Reilly. And I got a feeling we're about to go on divergent paths here.
Yeah, I don't think we're on the same page on this one. Okay, I'm going to start with the obvious. It was a well-wrestled match. It was good. I couldn't give two shits about Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle O'Reilly looks like he should be, like, working on a dock somewhere, right? Or, like, like he's that, like, you know, guy that graduated high school, like, a few years, like, ago and is, like, still hanging out, like, near the bus stop after school trying to pick up seniors, you know? Like, it just, like, listen, he doesn't look like a wrestler. He doesn't act like a wrestler. He's a great in-ring worker, right? But, like, AEW's got a lot of guys, Kyle O'Reilly's, right, who do everything else a lot better than Kyle O'Reilly does. Like, I don't need Kyle O'Reilly on my TV in a singles capacity in 2024. Put him back in the tag team, great, you know? But, like, as a singles wrestler, no thanks. Like, I went to the bathroom for this match. I came back and saw most of it. But, like, you know, this was my bathroom break. Like, you know, I don't care about Kyle O'Reilly. I only care a little about Roderick Strong. I mean, more on that, you know, because, like, the real reason to care about Roderick Strong came back last night, right, you know? But to me, it's like two guys who are just there, who aren't, you know, like they're just there, you know, they're two guys that you can replace very easily wrestling with each other, you know,
Man.
And it was a good match. It was a good match. I liked the match much more than I thought I would, but I guess, you know, going in, like that should have been the expectation, right? They worked together a ton, you know?
Yeah, they didn't have the strongest storyline going into it, but I think these guys, through sheer force of will, like, in hitting each other hard as fuck and having that experience of working with each other, knowing each other's offense and, you know, going in and out of stuff, that they willed, like, this crowd into getting with the match, into getting the match over, I thought. And I really like this. You know, I like Kyle O'Reilly a lot. I never the only, like, time I was not in on Kyle O'Reilly was when he was doing that cool Kyle stuff. But there was a match, you know, with him and Finn Balor, I remember, in NXT, and it was like, this guy has all the great babyface elements of people like Bryan Danielson, Sami Zayn. Like, he has all that stuff. Like, and he's tough, and he can, quote-unquote, he can fight. Like, he does not have the problem Hook has, like, to where that stuff doesn't look good. So, like, I think with Kyle, it's an aesthetic thing. You know, you show up looking like, you know, you're going to Woodstock or something. It's tough.
Yeah,
you know?
Listen, that guy needs a scissor in the worst way, right? Yeah, you know, like, he needs clippers. He needs something, you know, right? Because, like,
let's get him to the black barbershop and get that line back, you know?
Here's the thing. I hope I'm wrong about him, right? You know, because you know, I'm a wrestling fan. I tend to like everything. I used to write a column called The Eternal Optimist, right? So, like, I try to like everything.
This man like everything.
But like, I just can't get into Kyle O'Reilly. Like, it's like he intentionally does things to make him look like less of a superstar.
Wow.
You know? Like I just don't get it, right? Because he can wrestle really well, right? You know? And, like, people want to like him. But, like, it's just not there, you know? And, like, I think AEW kind of realizes that, right? Like, I don't think it was a coincidence they brought him back with fanfare and then jobbed him to Roddy right away, right? Like, I think that tells you, like, hey, we don't really have huge plans for you. We don't really see it with you, you know? Like, you serve this purpose, and, like, we'll see where it goes from here. But they had a good match. I mean, you know, I'm burying it a lot more than, like, I probably need to. I mean, the match was good. It was a solid, like, 3.75, 4-star match, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, that doesn't stand out on last night's card, because last night's card was amazing, but it was a good match, you know? Yeah. And it was, as much as it pains me to say, it was a good addition to the card.
Look at that. Growth.
I try to be a decent human, you know, even if a guy makes me want to turn the TV off.
TBS title match, Willow Nightingale runs through Julia Hart like a hot knife through butter, and I think this is the right decision on a million fronts.
Yeah, a couple thoughts here. Floyd called this. Like, I'm sitting next to Floyd, and he's like, this needs to be a squash match. Woolley just needs to run through her. And what was it, 5-6 minutes, right?
6 minutes.
Yeah, you know, so, like, the thing is, I'm a big fan of Julia, right? You know, but, like, where they're going doesn't involve her, you know? Yeah. And
I think there's a lot of that on this show.
Yeah.
Like, where they're going,
and
you ain't,
like,
involved, buddy.
And, like, you know, the thing is, I just feel like, Same as Swerve, right? You know, kind of the Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins comparison again, right? Like, all people are going to remember is that Willow won the title and then Mercedes came out to go confront her, right? They're not going to remember shit from that match.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that Willow and Julia Hart could have a great match. You know, Julia's improved a ton and Willow's solid in the ring, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, they could have done much more than what they did last night, but I think it was perfect for what it was, you know?
Yeah.
Yuli made Willow look really strong because she needs to look really strong, right? She's going up against, you know, Mercedes in a huge spot at Double or Nothing, right?
Yep.
And so I think the match did exactly what it needed to do.
Yeah, Willow also somebody that took a long way in, like, you know, starting as a dark extra, like doing jobs to the likes of Brandi Rhodes back in the day.
Sometimes I forgot that she even wrestled.
Yeah, yeah. You know, by design.
Yeah, I guess so, right?
But, yeah, she, you know, she took a long way, representing AEW internationally in Japan and Mexico. She had a lot of great comments on it in the scrum as well. And I think, you know, the thing with Mercedes and her is it's such a natural kind of rivalry, you know, with respect to the history of women's wrestling. Like, there's always been, you know, like a bigger woman taking on, like a slim, like, small, fast woman that, you know, they use, like, their agility and play off each other. Like, you know, I've seen, you know, people compare this to, like, Manami Toyota and Aja Kong. Like, I'm not calling Willow Nightingale Aja Kong or anything, or I'm not calling Mercedes, you know, Manami Toyota or anything. But the elements are there. That's all I'm saying. They had a match last year out with a lot of history, and I think the storyline's only going to heat up more. And they've done, if you boil it down, you remove, like, just your individual, like, hey, I don't like this particular thing. If you look at the macro of it, it's like, oh, there's misdirection stuff here. There's a clear dislike between these two. And I think it's all set to come to a head. And I think they already kind of announced the match.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, that thing. I'm all in.
I'm looking forward to it. I have concerns. So, like, a couple things. Like, first, right, like, there's rumors it's going to main event, like, Double or Nothing, right? I think there could be backlash there. Because I think that, you know, Swerve has such a positive relationship with the audience, you know, and I think being the first black world champion, you know, you look at Kofi, right, and there's like a view that like Kofi's run wasn't really treated well, right? You know, he was often not the main event, right? So like if we're talking the first big pay-per-view with Swerve as champ, if he's not the main event, I think there could be backlash there. I understand people love Mercedes, but like I don't think they love her that much, you know what I mean? and like I look at it and I think that we don't know what she brings to the table this point, do we, right? Like, she was a great wrestler in WWE. She was uniquely good in an arena where you weren't able to be uniquely good, right?
She was good in Stardom. She was good in New Japan, but that injury had changed everything.
Right, and she's been gone a long time. And, like, sometimes when she, like, has gotten physical, it's looked a little clunky, right? You know, so I hope I'm wrong because I think that, like, the women's division, like, needs her, right? They need a real star, right? You know? And she's definitely that. Like, the fans are all in on her. But, like, it's kind of a weird dynamic, right? Fans want to cheer
like,
her.
People like Willow.
Really like Willow in, like, an underground, you know, groundswell of support kind of way, right? Like, the kind that just isn't going to get booed and is going to turn your established star into a heel, right? Yeah. And maybe that's the plan. Maybe they're going to turn her into a heel. But, you know, I almost feel like that's a waste, that's, like, wasted momentum, too, right? You know, like, if Mercedes comes in that hot, right, you know, why not run with her as a babyface for a while first, right? Mm-hmm. You know? And, like, I understand there's history with her and Willow, but you can get there, right? Like, I think that I would have let, like, babyface Mercedes run a little bit, whereas now you almost force her into a position where she's got to be the heel or risk, like, the crowd, like, revolting against her a little bit. It's interesting how it's going to play out. There's a lot of elements there that I think, look, like, it could be awesome.
Then there's a silent Britt Baker factor that she could come at any time, so...
Yeah, you know, especially now that Adam Cole's back, right? You know, we didn't even talk about that in the last match.
Look at that.
Right?
That's
how loaded this show is. Like, that stable needs him bad, right?
Like, I never thought I would say that. Like, I saw Adam Cole walking around the back, you know, quickly say hello. I didn't even think about, like, oh, he's healthy or whatever. Like, it didn't even cross my mind. So he stood about the wheelchair. I was like, what? Oh, okay. Cool.
That stable needs him bad. Now it clears away for MJF to come back, right? You know, I think, like, that's a good feud when they're not doing the world title, right?
Yes.
Get away from the world title.
On the
do
side.
Any type of creative stuff you want to do, I'm here for it, right? I like Adam Cole. I like MJF. They've got good chemistry together. You know, we haven't really seen it, right? Like, we saw a comedy match, main event, when we stayed here.
Take that shit away from the world belt. But not half as mad at it.
Right, you know, but it's there. And, like, you know, they're building little things, right? Like, I mean, the way Cole looked at Wardlow last night, right? Like, he was gonna stab him in the back, right? You know, I mean, I don't think Wardlow's long for that stable, right? You know, and the obvious is that him and MJF are going to reform the Pinnacle. Maybe they grab FTR. Maybe we're looking at, you know, like, that as the storyline going forward. Mm-hmm. But, Yeah, I felt like we knew we would do it a disservice. We didn't at least mention that Adam Cole came back last night. Okay, so back to the women, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they did the right thing last night, right? You know, Willow looked super strong. It's a great moment for her. She's probably taking an L to Mercedes in a month, you know?
Yeah.
But she got, like, a little bit of a moment. I really want to see where it goes, right? Because, like I said, it could be great, but there's a lot of landmines they have to avoid that, you know, like, I don't necessarily trust AEW to navigate through them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that Tony's got experience navigating through those type of problems yet, mm-hmm. right? You know, and so... who knows? Wait and see, right? To be determined. I'm here for it. So, you know, that's the best I can say about it.
Six-man party match. House of Black defeat Cope, Briscoe, and Eddie Kingston. I booed this finish.
Really?
I'm done with the House of Black. Or Malakai Black in particular. I'm just tired of it. I'm into Brody King. I like him. Buddy Matthews, I can take him or leave him at this point. Yeah. But, yeah, you know, I thought the babyface army was, you know, gonna, you know, stand tall, but they had a lot of babyfaces going over, so I guess this was just to, you know, balance it out. But looks like they're setting up something with Malakai Black and Copeland.
Yep.
So I don't know. It feels like there's a lot of potential for boom fuckery to start getting booked, like with Malakai Black spookiness and, you know, aversion. You know, this crippling condition that he has of putting his shoulders on the ground for 3 seconds.
I read a review on Lords of Pain this morning of the card, and like they basically said like how Malakai Black must have in his contract that he doesn't ever get pinned, you know? But like, here's the thing, right? I'm a huge Adam Copeland fan. Like, mm-hmm. I've fucked with him forever, right? You know, I'm of the opinion that he has adapted incredibly well to what AEW does.
I agree.
Like, he was putting on great matches in WWE, you know, in his run. Like, you know, there just wasn't space for him with Roman there, right? Like, the original plan was push him to the moon, give him that, like, feel-good world title moment. But, like, Roman became this, like, overarching thing, and all of a sudden there was no room for him anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, he made the right move going to AEW. I'm glad they got the Christian feud out of the way. I thought it was awesome. But, like, now, like, you know, it's very clear. He's got a list of guys he wants to work with, right?
Yeah.
And Malakai Black is, like, very clearly on that list. It's a fresh matchup. I'm not a huge Malakai Black fan. I don't hate him. I don't love him. He's kind of just there for me. But, like, I don't think Copeland has bad matches, right? And I don't think he has bad feuds. I think that, you know, they find a way to make them interesting. And I'm interested to see what they could do, right? You know, I mean, Malakai Black, like, when he was in NXT, he had some good momentum, you know? He had some really good momentum.
Yeah.
And so, like, this is really his first chance since Cody, right?
Yeah.
To, like, have a real one-on-one feud with an established star. And, like, I'm only giving the benefit of the doubt. I mean, more than anything, I'm really willing to give Edge the benefit of the doubt. You know, with all that in mind, I think the booking was great last night, right? You know, I mean, it was a reason to get Eddie Kingston on the show. It was a reason to get, you know, Copeland on the show. It was a reason to get, you know, Jay Briscoe on the show, right? And, you know, Mark Briscoe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry about that. But, you know, I think that if you're going in the direction of Malakai Black versus Copeland, like, that was the perfect finish, right? They did not interact at all in the match.
Yeah.
Like, they teased it over and over again, and they didn't interact at all until he spits the mist in his face and kicks him in the head and pins him clean, you know? So, like, to me, that's a fresh food coming out, you know? And, like, I feel like this, the big theme of this pay-per-view is, like, we're hitting the reset button, right?
Like,
we're moving in a different direction.
No,
here.
Nothing, then,
you know? And so, like, this is a solid match. Like, this is a solid mid-card match, right? Like, you know, I'll be happy to see it on Double or Nothing. Right, you know, as like the sixth most important match, right? You know, but it works, right? Like it's there.
And then our opener, the AEW Continental title match was Kazuchika Okada versus Pac, and man, seeing these guys, I saw these guys backstage, and they were just, I saw them working on stuff over and over. Every time I look over to the left, you know, I was, you know, waiting for there's a Swerve City podcast interview with Adam Copeland coming. I was hanging out outside the locker room while they were recording it, and I was just looking to my left, and Pac and Okada were over there just, like, completely, you know, locked in the zone, and they got to it. Like, this is one of the best openers in the history of AEW, I think.
Yeah.
This was, like, seeing Kazuchika Okada really embrace, like, having fun, but, like, being a heel at the same time,
mm-hmm.
I completely lost my mind when you thought he was doing the Rainmaker.
And he flipped everybody off.
Oh, my God. This guy's a
I
master.
Loved it. Loved it.
He's a master, man.
So, it was funny. I was talking to Floyd before the show, and I was like, Pac and Okada need to open.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is that Okada doesn't necessarily have a style fit for AEW, right? He's a slow burn You know, he benefits from that 30 to 35 minute match a lot more than he benefits from that like 15 to 20 minute match. You know what I mean? And like the uniqueness of how good he is in the ring doesn't really come out in like your standard AEW TV match, right? So like he's had some matches on TV that were good, right? You know, but like they don't stand out and they're a little bit slower paced, especially to start, you know? And I thought that having that open with the crowd being as hot as they were was the perfect decision, right? You know, and the other thing is like Pac was the perfect opponent for him. Like, you know, Pac is another guy. He's kind of a slow burn, right? You know, I mean, he can you know turn it up, but like, you know, I think those two guys really meshed well together because what they like to do is kind of the same thing. They like to kind of start slow and build, right?
Well, think about it. This is a Toriyama dojo right here. You know, Pac spent a lot of time in Dragon Gate. Zushi Okada, you know, in his early days, trained by Ultimo Dragon, so these guys are speaking the same wrestling language. So. As far as like, you know, the match, like, you know, Pac, you know, ends up, he leaves with a he's our bastard chance. So he's someone that's endeared himself to the audience. And, I really enjoy the continental like style matches. Like there's no interference you got to worry about. It's just like these guys going in there. Yeah. And if there's like shenanigans with like a kick or an eye gouge or something, it happens. But this was about as clean as it got. And,
is there really ever a better fit than Okada and you know, Continental Champion,
yeah,
right? Like, this perfect guy for this, right?
It was set
kinda
up.
Kind of exists in his own silo, right? You know what I mean? Like, his match will be destination TV on every pay-per-view, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's perfect. And I think they had a great match, you know? Yeah. I mean, I'm interested to see where they go with Okada next, right? Because I think you have to book him carefully.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Is he in Anarchy in the Asylum at Double or Nothing? Is that where they're going with the Elite?
Oh, no, I'm not sure, but
right, you know, I mean that there's lots of options there.
Right? Yeah, like I'm interested. I think what's unique about Okada is like there are so many different guys that can take him out of being Kazuchika Okada of New Japan Pro Wrestling. He can be Kazuchika Okada of All Elite Wrestling. Like, just the personality stuff really stood out, you know, amongst all the moves and everything. You know, we know his sequences. We've seen his work and stuff like that, but the way he was like interacting with like the entire front row that I was sitting in, it was amazing. So overall, this card was sensational. We're kind of, you know, pressed for time a little bit here, so
special shout out to the Acclaimed and Bullet Club on the pre-show. I thought they absolutely nailed
the
gun, it, right?
Yeah, I thought the guns were great.
Absolutely nailed it, right? Yeah. You know, that was another match that I could have like just taken or left, and like, you know, it was interesting because like, you know, the first two matches on the pre-show were just kind of there, right? You know, I mean, sure, you've got your Trent Beretta storyline, that's never really going anywhere all that exciting, right?
I'll say this for that: when Orange Cassidy walked out, his music hit and Trent was standing there, I was like, time for some shit now. Yeah, so I was in on it.
Right. But so, but like, you could tell the difference in energy, right, between the first two matches in the pre-show and then Gun Club versus the Acclaimed, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that took the arena up a notch. And I thought they killed it, right? Like, it was the right move, you know, to put the titles on the Gun Club, you know? But I felt like that needed a little bit of a shout-out because that got lost in the shuffle of what was an all-time great card.
Yeah, man. Just a phenomenal show overall. Phenomenal weekend. Great hanging with you, Dave.
Awesome hanging with you. It was a great time.
Had breakfast together the other day. We had some drinks last night, man. A
couple adult beverages.
Couple of those. So we're going to, you know, pack it up and get on our respective airplanes shortly. Hope you guys like this show. Dave, you have anything you'd like to plug?
No. I'm pretty out of the circle of trust, so to speak. So it was good to jump on a podcast. It's been a long time, you know?
Yeah, man. So we'll try to get Dave back on one of these shows with James, and we'll do all that going forward. I don't do all the plugs. That's normally James's thing. But follow all the shows on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. And, you know, you guys know where to find us. There's a lot of clips and, you know, tweet content and stuff in the Discord channel, which I've talked more about the weekend in depth, and you know, it was great. I met like pretty much every wrestler I want, you know, could think of wanting to meet, you know, backstage. Danielson, you know, I had a drink with Jericho last night. I sat with Barry Bloom.
Well, it was surreal sitting like 10 feet from Jericho, just watching him exist in like life. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's like a larger than life guy that we've seen forever.
Yeah.
You know, and like it was really surreal to like just see him in his element, just hanging out. You know,
big thank you to Swerve Strickland for this weekend, and congratulations. Shout out to Montese, shout out to Montese's grandma Gloria.
She's the best, man.
Awesome. Sat next to her at the show as well. I had a great time with her. And I'll never forget this weekend. This is the best pro wrestling show I've ever attended. Like, you know, just had the most fun. It was amazing. So without further ado, we're going to wrap it up. We'll holler at y'all next time. Peace.
See ya.